job of picking them up early.
Yep.
As I mentioned, the response to eradication, to the introductions way back to the early 90s for eradications, we began also monitoring more intensively in the ports and other high-risk sites. Hopefully that's why we're picking them up earlier. And finally, the subject of the talk, we established a Russian Far East port and more recently a Japanese, and now we're getting into Korean port monitoring programs. We have identified and targeted high-risk ships for inspection, try to pick up these ships and inspect them if we think there's a chance that the moths are coming in. And we initiated research in a number of areas, including how to tell on a molecular basis Asian and European gypsy moths, which I had a couple of slides on that, but I probably won't have time to get to them. Now, the monitoring program in Russia, they monitor for three species, Dispar, and Mathura, and Monaca, at several of their major ports. The Russians do pheromone trapping for us, both within the ports themselves and in the surrounding woodlands. They do light trapping in the ports themselves. They also just simply visually monitor the ports for the insects. Ships at port during moth flight period keep their lighting to a minimum, and as you are aware, moths tend to come to light, and being good flyers, they will come in and land on the ships if they're well lighted and lay eggs. So this has been good at keeping the populations on the ships themselves down. We identify and record all ships in port during the flight season. Goes back to that anyway. And then they have a program with ship inspection, cleaning if needed, and certification. This is actually done by private firms in Russia. They will go in and inspect ships. If they find moths, they scrape whatever off, and then we'll end up certifying them as being moth-free. And what this buys the shipping companies is it allows the ships, when they get to the U.S., to come straight into port and dock. And if they don't have the certification and they're coming from an area where there's, in time where there's moth flight, they hold them offshore until they go out and inspect them. And you might say, a big deal, but at $25,000 a day, these companies are more than happy to come in and pay these firms to go ahead and inspect and certify the ship. And of course, if they find something and manage to clean it up so that they don't have the problem with the inspectors in the U.S. finding it, that stops them from having situations where the Customs and Border Patrol will say, sorry, turn the ship around and leave, which really gets expensive. This is one of the ports, I'm not sure which one, over in Russia, but the included this slide just to show you that the woodlands indeed will come down right to the edge of the water here, and apparently from what Vic tells me, if you turn around from where this picture was taken and snap another picture, you're looking right at woods again also. The moths do indeed come into these port areas, sometimes in high numbers. Now, the Russians are very good about providing annually, I haven't seen this year's file yet, but data on how many moths they're finding in the various ports, the trapping data. You can see here they had a peak up around 2000, 2001, the populations fell off, and then they had been coming back up of late. For example, we've got the pictures from, I don't remember exactly which port this was, but this the Hengjin Roberts Bank, and here's a closer picture of this. You may not pick up the details in the back of the room, but all these little spots are moths, males and females. Now, Paul Schaefer apparently took a look at this picture in the high-res version in some detail, and he said, well, there are some Dispar in there, but most of these are actually look like they're Mathura, so in either case, we don't want them. I'm going to go by that one real quickly. The other thing I want to point out here, this is some of the light trapping data. If you look especially the green bars from Olga, this one port, in comparison to some of the others, the checkered bars here, you can see them, it's not much to them, show the male moth catch, and the solid bars show the female moth catch in these light traps. And in some of these populations it's pretty comparable, but in some you get way more females. I mean, they get really out of sync, which gets back to the issue of trying to manage these insects on the basis of the Asian gypsy moths on the basis of male trap catch, and it just doesn't work real well. In Japan, We have been trapping since 2004 at 19 different ports. I think they've switched the ports around a little bit, but that's about what they've been doing. They're trying to add three major ports into this. There are, unfortunately, something like 150 ports in Japan where ships can dock before heading to the North America. This year, we have added ship inspection and certification. I didn't get a lot of details on this one. It's political, but for some reason, the Japanese are still showing some resistance to this whole program. And we do have, with the ship inspection certification, it's active at six of the ports, though. So they are moving ahead with it, and Vic, as I said, I believe, right, is in Japan right now talking to them about getting this going. Korea, we're also trying to get them going on this. We have very limited trapping data this year. It's coming from two ports. We're trying to add six more. And here again, the folks, there's some Canadians over there with them, are over talking with them. China, we are just entering into negotiations with them. I mentioned that before, toward this port monitoring, and we did host the delegation back in November. These show the ports in Japan that were monitored in 2004, and some of the problems here you run into. This shows an example in 2006 of the different ports of this one vessel, seven different ports the one vessel visited during the potential moth flight season, so it does get a little dicey over there trying to figure out risk of these different boats that may be coming into port in North America. I was going to go into this, but I think it's going to take a little longer than looking at some of these genetic markers at the time that I have left at this point. So I will just say that we have a couple of things now that we're working on, a mitochondrial and a nuclear DNA markers that we use to distinguish Asian from North American gypsy moth. They are not perfect by any means, especially if you start looking at what's over in Europe. We're trying to increase the resolution with microsatellite data, and the one thing I didn't put down on this one slide here is that sometimes we get bugs in, especially things off of ships, that just don't amplify at all with the gypsy moth markers, and they tend to be pretty beat up, although they look good enough that the DNA should be okay. But we generally come to the conclusion, well, they're probably not gypsy moths. So we're trying to, and a lot of the background work was done by Ball and Armstrong. We're going to try and work some of the barcoding work into this so that when we get those moths that are sort of, well, we aren't quite sure what they are, we will be able to give people an answer on that. And anyway, with that, I will leave you with the famous Dexter Elm so that we don't end up trying to eradicate gypsy moth this way again. Thank you.
We have time for a few questions. If anybody has questions for David? I mean, you did a very thorough job.
I'm just wondering, you know, it just occurred to me, I guess this is just really chaos occurred to me, but what do you think, in terms of the actual invasion pathways, how important do you think, say, the actual ship itself is versus the contents? And I guess, so I'm sort of thinking, how much is accomplished in scrutinizing ships versus, say, containers or cars?
Well, I think they got real paranoid about the ships because of the North Carolina incident. And certainly, if they come into port during, you know, if you've got populations on the boat and they come into port at that time, you're definitely having a risk of a lot of bugs coming in very locally. It depends on if they come into Long Beach. You know, what's a larva going to do? But an adult, then again, can fly some way in. The bugaboo is going to be getting the containers and the things that were, because the containers, you never know where they're coming from. It's a problem, yes. That's why we keep trapping. Yeah. Well, that was in the one population. If you looked in some of the others, they were very comparable. It was, I'm not sure. They get out of sync at times, so it's hard to say.
Today, I were talking a little bit about, you know, termites' ecological problem associated with the mulch application and the potential, the technology we can develop. As you know, the termites is an invasive species, especially to our state, it's a Mississippi state. I try to give you an example how the termites distribute in our state. You know, if we divide to the three band of the area from the coastal area, southern area, and the central area, we can see some, the trends here that, the almost 100% of the county already being infested by this, Formosan termites. And the central area, you can see here that the percentage is, I cannot say exactly, it should be out. That's 72%. And I go to the central percent is 42%. And if you can see this right side of this chart, you can see that different severity of the damage caused by Formosan termites in different areas. The central area is the lowest, and the coastal area is the highest based on the alleys attracted by the light trap. So that is can see that invasive trends from south to north is reduced the damage, but the trends still keep going into spreading. The problem is for us, the challenge is how to prevent the Formosan termites further spreading, including long distance and local spreading. And the second challenge is how to manage the population and spread the population. Last one is how to reduce the termiticide use in an urban area. And the relationship of the Formosan termites and the tree-based mulch is kind of the, lots of the people suspect as a, big ecological, factor to affect this. Let's just see that, different variety of the mulch, organic mulch, inorganic mulch, there's, sitting around just in the urban area. It's extensively used. That this as a big factor is affected the termites, spreading locally and long distantly, and possibly to with the, human activity, go with the, mulch products. And this is, something is Alice during swamp time that they're first landing on this, the wood, mulch, as a temporary habitat and a nutrition, transition time and before they are attacked in the house. Really. Let's look like a little bit this, taste, for the Alice, they're, survive. And you can see that, non-weather and weather is a significant difference, for the survival rate. The weather is a reduced that, the adverse, factor to against the termites. So that is always the weather will be, favorite to that termites to habitat and then grows their colony. That is a chart is, representing as a